Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
My name's Jazza and I forgot to prepare anything funny to say before we started recording. Jokes. I voted to remain.
Where are you joining us from today, Jazza?
Oh, yes, I forgot. Hello, I am from New York, New York. So good, they named it two times. On the Upper East? No.
West Side.
The Upper West Side. Thank you. I'm having a lovely time. It turns out New York's quite nice.
Are you surprised?
At least Manhattan. Am I surprised? Yes. I've had mixed experiences with major American cities recently. San Francisco and Los Angeles aren't the best, but New York is very similar to London, and I think that's why I like it.
See, I just, even though I do like New York, I just found when I went there, it seems like a slightly more clusterfucky version of London, like London without the space, all crammed into one place.
Yeah, it is a lot more kind of like cramped, but then doesn't that change when you go out to the other bits of New York, like Brooklyn or Queens or the Bronx and other places that I only know because of American television shows?
I mean, it probably does, I guess, but it seems like more of an intense city, and for me that's kind of a negative, I think. But, you know, different strokes, different folks.
I think, yes, good. Correct.
All right, that's the end of the podcast. We'll call it a day then.
Yeah, we actually just go around and I review American cities. No, we talk about politics, social issues, and current events with a particular bent towards Brexit, because that's the only thing that's happening. What are we going to talk about this week, Jimmy?
So since we last met to discuss things, the situation for Prime Minister Boris Johnson has changed quite considerably. When we signed off 2 weeks ago, it looked like he was going to prorogue Parliament and that he had the option to actually proceed with a no-deal Brexit, which rhetorically at least seemingly was what he was gunning for. And it's all gone wrong for him since then.
So this is the thing. Has it?
Ooh.
Or is this all part of the Dominic Cummings game plan? Dun, dun, dun. I don't know. I think that some of the assumptions that he's kind of got egg on his face now may be a bit premature, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, so just in brief, Boris Johnson actually managed to lose a vote, which means that he's now obliged to ask for an extension on October 31st to our EU membership to allow for more negotiating time, or who knows what the fuck. And he's also, well, not him personally, but a court case went against him in Scotland on the issue of whether it was legal for him to prorogue Parliament. And it was particularly concerned his motives for doing so. The Scottish court said that because he was proroguing Parliament really for political advantage and to actually change the timings around us leaving the EU, that was not allowed, basically. And the case is going to be appealed at the Supreme Court in London on Tuesday. We're recording this on Saturday.
It essentially means, it implies that he lied to the Queen,
yes,
which is a very big deal.
Is it? I guess the court thought it was, but
man, I don't know. It's a bit of a fucking mess, isn't it? It's almost as if there isn't a precedent for this shit.
Speaking of precedents, I was going to introduce the Lib Dem topic first, but this one seems better. John Bercow, the Speaker of the House of Commons, has announced that he will step down either by October 31st or before something else happens, at least by
the next election,
yeah.
Whichever comes first.
Yeah.
So the latest he will be in post is the 31st of October.
He's been in for about 10 years. I think, and he did put a time limit on his speakership, which he has overrun a bit. He was due to step down earlier, but he's seemingly decided that this Brexit thing is wrapping up at this point, which might be a slightly premature prediction, I think.
That's what I thought. I think he's essentially, though, stepping out of the way so that he cannot be used as something that the Conservatives can kind of like rally people around. And he also knows that with the current parliament, they are going to put someone who is also probably going to be a little bit more Remain-y and of his similar philosophy in the chair, rather than waiting for after a new parliament to be elected that may be a bit more Brexit-y. I think it's quite smart, and it kind of like absolves him of the responsibility. But he's done a good job as Speaker in terms of raising the power of Parliament and backbench MPs and all of that kind of stuff, but also apparently he was a bully, which of course has never been an accusation that has never been laying at the feet of any politician ever.
So I think we're going to be discussing his legacy and also some of the sort of more tactical things around the timing of all this. Me and Jazza, you might be surprised to know, disagree slightly on Mr. Burko's legacy. Speaking of things that we disagree on, Jazza, what are the Lib Dems up to this weekend?
Everybody has descended on Bournemouth, jewel in the crown of the southern coast of England. It is...
It's a bit harsh on Brighton.
Why are you laughing? Jo Swinson, it's her first conference as party leader. It is going to be Vince Cable's last party conference as a member of parliament. It's going to be Chuka Amuna's first conference. The ranks of the Liberal Democrats has swelled quite significantly. There are now 16 Liberal Democrat members of parliament, with the whip 17 if you include your favourite guy. And
who is my favourite guy? Who are you talking?
I can't remember. He's the one guy who's lost the Lib Dem.
Is it Stephen Lloyd?
It's a really boring white man name.
Whoa, man, that's a Welsh name. That's harsh.
Stephen
Lloyd.
You could just put in a Welsh accent on it. Doesn't make it Welsh, mate.
I don't even think that was a Welsh accent, but yeah. I think he's actually the MP for Bournemouth or Exmouth. Exmouth, Exbourne, who knows? All these places sound the same.
What's that? Somewhere outside of London? I don't know her. But the interesting thing that we're probably going to talk most about is the fact that Jo Swinson has proposed, and they are going to debate at conference tomorrow on Sunday. At the time of recording, they're going to be debating whether or not the Lib Dems will change their policy to move from backing a second referendum to just revoking Article 50 without any democratic process. I'll bugger off.
I am shocked.
Your sarcastic breathing.
It is staggering that the Liberal Democrats would propose such an undemocratic measure. Or is it undemocratic?
So I have principles, I will have you know.
So we're going to be debating the righteousness or otherwise of this move. And also, you know, the strategic aspects of it as well. Because we are, as people are very fond of saying in political journalism right now, an election is imminent. It is coming at some point.
Is that what we say now?
I don't know, people, you know, there's just been a lot of articles starting with an election is on its way, which is always true, unless you assume that our democracy is going to die.
I mean, are we that far away?
I don't know. It really depends on whether if a parliament vote for it. And with that, I think we can play some music and go into the discussions properly.
Excellent.
If you're enjoying the Right Dishonourable podcast and would like to support us in some way, you can do so by going to patreon.com/rightdishonourable. There you'll be able to donate money to us either on a per episode basis or per month basis or whatever else, and it helps us to pay for things like hosting and that sort of thing. We'd like to thank our current sponsors, Andrew Kilpatrick, David Warner, Emerson Sparks, Gemma Cumming, John O, Matt and Ollie McGregor. Thank you very much for your continued support of the show. Jazza, what would you put the odds of us leaving the EU by October the 31st out right now?
conventional wisdom says, what are zero odds? What are the odds for something not happening? I don't really know how betting works.
I mean, I don't think you're allowed to put a bet on something if the odds of it happening is zero.
Well, there you go. Well, it's people have been saying that it's now become illegal for us to leave with a no deal, and therefore leave on the 31st of October.
It is still saying these things.
It is a reputable journalist, Jimmy.
I see.
It is still possible for us to leave before the 31st of October with a deal. That's correct, right?
Yeah, it is still possible.
But the likelihood of our current parliament voting for that deal is next to fucking none, correct?
Correct.
Not least because Boris Johnson's majority is like minus 40?
He doesn't have a majority anymore, so...
Yeah, minus 40. and now he's going to have to ask for at least a 3-month extension, which would take us into the 31st of January. So... the chances are pretty low, I understand. But then I am so convinced, I've been so fed by people saying that Dominic Cummings is a genius of our time, that I am convinced that something is going to be whipped out of his pocket to fool us all. And we've all been duped into complacency. Do you read it in any other way?
So there was an opinion piece, I think it was on the Reaction website, which kind of made that case that actually a lot of the events, even if you read them as not having gone Boris's way, so the no deal blocking bill, which is sometimes called Ben's bill after Hillary Benn, seemingly that was something that stopped him from doing something that he in August was briefing, albeit through background sources and whatnot, that this was going to happen, that we were going to leave the EU deal or no deal on October 31st. And seemingly one of those options, the no deal option, has been taken off the table. The gist of that piece, and I think it's sort of the argument you're pointing towards, is that if you want to hold a general election with the overall message that it's the people versus Parliament and Boris Johnson is the people's candidate, then actually a lot of what's gone on in the last fortnight does play into that image quite well.
Yes, but then we're also holding off on the possibility of an election because of the fact that you have to have a 2/3 majority before an election is possible in Parliament.
Technically, you only need a majority if you pass a piece of legislation that says, notwithstanding the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, the next general election will take place on, and then name a date.
Oh, interesting.
You can still do that, although it would at very least be seen as not in the spirit of the original law.
But, imagine people not functioning in the spirit of the original intended law? God. Well, I mean, that's when the United Kingdom really would break apart, if people were stretching laws.
Yes, very good. Mm-hmm. Very dry.
Thank you.
But yeah, he, in theory, he only needs a simple majority to get an election scheduled.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't have that, does he?
No, he doesn't. And
any more, which is something new actually that we should probably talk about. 20 MPs from the Conservative 20, Party.
21, I think.
21.
It might have been.
Were kicked out of the party for.
For backing the No Deal bill,
yes,
I think it was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then they were followed subsequently by Amber Rudd, who quit the cabinet as the Work and Pension Secretary, and now doesn't have an intention of standing as a Conservative and Unionist Party candidate. She would stand as an independent Conservative, and also not in her current constituency of Hastings, which is probably quite smart because she has a majority of, like, what, 3?
Yeah, something like that. So yeah, you're right, there is, you know, Boris Johnson has actually taken Theresa May's non-majority and managed to slash it mm-hmm. down even further, mm-hmm. Which in theory does limit his room for manoeuvre even more than what it was at the start of September. Mm-hmm. But in practice, I think, you know, most of those MPs, I mean, as proved by their voting record, and, you know, how they voted it in that bill, are so ill-disposed to his general strategy on Brexit that arguably he's only just revealed a lack of majority that wasn't even there in the first place. It's just that the whip's been withdrawn for those 20 MPs. I mean, a lot has actually been said about, like, this is kind of an ideological narrowing of the Conservative Party, and the general tilt of Boris's cabinet is much more on the free marketer, libertarian end of things.
Yeah.
Do you think that voters will actually read it that way?
No, I don't. I don't think that normal people, and by normal people I mean people who don't read the BBC app at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't think that most people are really aware of kind of like the libertarian streak that runs through the current leaders, at the very least, of the Conservative government. I think that it's framed and feels more like it's Brexit alignment, and kind of all of the messy alignments that happen with the generic idea of Brexit, meaning kind of like patriotism and a certain amount of xenophobia and like confidence of trade deals with the United States and all of those kinds of things, actually, a lack of fiscal conservatism, which we've seen in kind of some of the policy decisions and policy announcements that Boris Johnson's government has announced. Like, people have been saying this a lot, but I don't think it's extreme or exaggerating to say that Boris Johnson is basically turning the Conservative Party, which is broad church and moderate and has included the libertarians and the populists within its broad church, within its big tent. But he's narrowing it to look more like what the Brexit Party looks like. Do you think it's an exaggeration to say that?
It depends what you mean in terms of its policy platform.
Its policy platform, its tone, the people who are now like in the big four jobs. Like, I feel like that's not too much of a stretch to say that.
See, I think the thing about the Brexit Party, and it was something that was always true about UKIP as well, is that while Nigel Farage is definitely someone who's pro free market. You know, he was a former metals trader or something. Mm-hmm. And he's much more of that line of thinking. He's an old school Thatcherite, really, in terms of the economics. In terms of like the social policy, the party was much more socially conservative, and actually the party also drew in a lot of people who, you know, the kind of old Labour voters who were actually like pro welfare and pro state intervention along some of those things. Mm-hmm. So you can never say of UKIP that it was a straightforwardly libertarian party, even though Farage clearly has leanings that way.
UKIP, which obviously is slightly different to the Brexit Party, but UKIP was always also a very disjointed coalition of ideologies that were only tied together by the desire to leave the European Union.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like the Brexit Party and what the Conservative Party is now being moulded into is a lot more of a it feels like it is just one slither of kind of like what used to make up those broader coalitions that existed in both the old Conservative Party and UKIP. Actually, I think that this is a very narrow ideological representation of kind of like the right at the moment, and I think that that's going to be like that. They may very well, if there is an election, enter into that election and use it as kind of like a people versus parliament election, and do very well. But actually, for the kind of policies that people like Priti Patel and Dominic Raab, and even, well, Boris Johnson doesn't really believe anything.
I think that's unfair, just for the record. Yeah,
fair enough.
His beliefs are flexible, I would say. Which
that
is not the same thing.
I will allow you to be generous to him. But the ideologies that are the basis of and trust and that lot that kind of underlie the way that their vision for politics, if they were properly explained to the British public, I don't think that that would get more than 25-30% of kind of like any approval ratings.
I think that's fair. You're talking about Liz Truss has this whole like delivery eating, Uber ordering kind of rhetoric.
She's also a fucking nutter. When that people were saying that she should be Chancellor when Boris Johnson was putting his cabinet together, my God, that would have been bloody terrifying.
I mean, I think that the other big difference, you're right about the kind of more free market stuff, and there is some overlap, particularly between Nigel Farage and Boris Johnson's cabinet. But in terms of the more socially liberal issues, like, you can throw a lot of crap at Boris Johnson, but he does seem to be a Tory that's genuinely in favour of things like gay marriage. You sort of sense that the cabinet is not that bothered about sort of recreational drug use either.
Yeah, sure.
Not just because of the records of the various, you know, Michael Gove, etc., but it's taken on a lot of people from, these are more like special advisor roles, but people from, say, like the Institute of Economic Affairs and like Taxpayers Alliance, people who are like generally libertarian on drugs law, and I think that will have an effect. I think you're more likely, to get sort of.
I do want to challenge that, and I don't want to put too much weight on this because I never actually dived too deep into this story. But apparently, there is internal conservative polling on opinions and attitudes towards trans people, especially in battleground constituencies in the north. And we may say that these people are libertarian, but they are going to be, from what I have seen and not researched hugely, but they are going to be very happy to throw trans people and their right to self-identify and have education and rights for trans kids and all of that kind of stuff, throw those people, some of the most vulnerable people, under the bus. And so we can say that they are socially liberal, but they're socially liberal because society decided that gay people weren't abhorrent. We decided that as a culture, like, probably about 15 years ago. Whereas they're not here, say, advocating for kind of like trans people to be protected under the law and to be able to determine their own gender and all of those kind of things. So I would challenge kind of like this social libertarianism. It's only when it's very convenient for them.
Well, I think there's a difference between people like Boris Johnson. I think Boris Johnson is a social libertarian, to be honest with you. I think those are his ideological leanings. But you're right to say that like conservative members, i.e. the kind of activists on the ground and the conservative people who inclined to vote conservative, most of those people won't be socially liberal, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But
exactly, you know, there's that lack of, that's kind of what I was trying to get at, saying that actually, yeah, the type of politics that this group of people who are at the top of government now believe in actually is not representative of the people who are going to be voting for them. And I think it's, I mean, how long is that disconnect of ideology actually going to be able to hold together? I mean, I don't know. We're not in normal times in a way that we would normally be able to hold this to account. But I think that that's an interesting thing, that they are tied together just by this single question. But frankly, until that one question of Brexit is resolved, that disparity of ideology is not going to come to the fore. And people aren't going to notice or care.
Well, there is an irony here, which is that the issue of our EU membership was for many, many years kind of like sort of just taken along with whichever party was in power. You know, obviously the Tories have their differences on EU membership, but our integration into the EU was something that was kind of downplayed as much as possible by Labour and the Conservatives. Mm-hmm. The leaderships anyway, people like John Major, people like Tony Blair, because they knew that there was disquiet among their activists and also among, you know, the wider population about that. And people tended to vote for those parties based on, you know, policies that had nothing to do with our EU membership. Mm-hmm. And now you have a government that could potentially, if we went to a general election, claim, you know, a majority in the House of Commons. That's still possible for the Tories. And it will be definitely on an election campaign that was run around Brexit, but it will also potentially enable a lot of these kind of more libertarian policies around the kind of free market stuff, so deregulation and so on. But people won't necessarily have voted for them for that reason, particularly, yeah, Tory members who probably, you know, some of them do believe that, I'm sure, but some of them don't. Mm-hmm.
Which is why, you know, another referendum is the only way to legitimately move forward on Brexit. Just wanted to slip that in there very casually.
Okay, well, what would you say to Joe Swinson of the Liberal Democrats, given that she is advocating a policy for the next general election whereby the Lib Dems will pledge to revoke Article 50 if they form a majority government?
I have voted Liberal Democrat in every single election that I have ever had cross my path. I haven't always automatically voted Liberal Democrat. Sometimes it's taking me a minute to like flirt a little bit with some of the other parties. Maybe take my highlighter to a couple of other manifestos also, you know. But I have ended up voting Liberal Democrat every single time. It is the party that most aligns with my ideology. I don't know if I would be able to back a Liberal Democrat manifesto that advocated for leaving the for revoking Article 50 without another Democratic kind of like stopgap or determiner. I think that that completely highlights the all of the worst arguments that are made about people who want to give people the chance to be able to be included in specifically the Brexit question again. I think it would be a grave mistake that would drive that would make the problems and the disenchantment with politics in our country so much worse by virtue of this kind of like we know best attitude. It needs to be returned to the people in some way or another. Also, I think there's a certain amount of hypocrisy of so say for example the Liberal Democrats were the largest party in a next election. Obviously not going to happen, but say that that happened.
You mean they get the most seats? Yes. In the House of Commons.
Yeah, exactly. And then they had a mandate to enact their policy of just revoking Article 50 without a vote. That would.
What's wrong with that exactly? They've campaigned on a clear pledge to do something. They've won a general election.
Because
isn't it? That's how our system's supposed to work in theory.
Because one of the biggest and most consistent criticisms that the Liberal Democrats have for the way that Westminster works is the lack of representative nature of the voting system that we have, and the only thing that can provide a true majority is putting it back to the people with a one person, one vote. Kind of like baseline. And if we were to put back the first past the post system as kind of like this thing that creates this false idea of a mandate for the majority of the country, when actually you can get a majority in the House of Commons with just under 30% of the vote, I think that that would be the greatest hypocrisy and a huge mistake if the Liberal Democrats decided to have this in a manifesto. But I worry that they are going to end up voting for that tomorrow at conference. And I would have to think about who I would vote for, because I wouldn't back that policy.
Okay, but what if the Lib Dems won a majority in the House of Commons? Or let's say they won, you know, a plurality, that they ended up as the party with the most seats, but not a majority in the House of Commons.
But both of those outcomes are not going to happen. But yeah.
Okay, but let's say hypothetically it did. Yeah. And they went into coalition with, say, the SNP or Labour or some combination of both. And there were enough kind of, you know, this was kind of depend on, say the SNP ran on a pro-Remain platform, say Labour in the end also ran on a pro-Remain platform, although there's no guarantee at this point that they will do so. If a majority of people voted for pro-Remain parties, I mean in absolute polling terms, not in terms of the number of seats they get, is there anything particularly wrong about them deciding to keep us in the EU off the back of that?
I think that the reason that Joe Swinson has leaned in so hard into this policy is because it strengthens a Liberal Democrat negotiation position post a
general election.
Yeah.
Would you see them being negotiating exactly or negotiating for? You're talking about if there's a coalition is kind of forming after a general election
probably not a coalition. Joe Swinson has ruled that out with both the Conservative and the Labour Party. But some kind of an alliance to move us past Brexit, for example, is probably what it is going to look more like. And that strengthens the idea of a referendum being seen as kind of like a middle ground compromise if we go more like to the most extreme Remain end of the spectrum. And it also ensures that the idea of having Remain on the ballot is also taken a lot more seriously. There is obviously kind of like this weird thing of being not one of the major two parties that Lib Dems have post-coalition with the Conservative Party, kind of learned to... that they are putting up, rather than actual policies that they want to enact, they're putting up negotiation positions with parties that they would end up working with. And I think that this is what this is more like, but the philosophy and the ideas behind it, I still think, are a huge, huge mistake. Like, I'm just going to reinforce all of the problems and criticisms that have been thrown at people who fell on my side of the referendum.
You mean criticisms of them not respecting democracy?
Yes.
I mean, don't you kind of sense at this point, I mean, I see what you're saying about the, you know, it being a play basically by Joe Swinson, and that does make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But don't you half suspect, I mean, we've both met our fair share of Lib Dem members, because we both were Lib Dem mm-hmm. members at one mm-hmm. point. I would not be surprised at all if many of those members, who some of whom will be voting at the conference tomorrow, do actually think that revoking it is just the right thing to do and don't really care about democracy. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Yeah, perhaps, but I think that that is the wrong decision to come to.
Doesn't that say something kind of fundamentally bad about the party, though, that it attracts those sorts of people?
I think that there are people who think that like democratic decisions are a mistake across all of the parties. I don't think that's special for the Liberal Democrats. I think that a lot of it is kind of like what's the word? Kind of like damage control. They're like, it's gotten so extreme and we're so close to the wire and there is clearly no way forward for this. Like, for example, if Parliament would not vote to allow for the UK to have a second referendum, for example, then maybe that is where kind of like this positioning of let's just call the whole thing off comes from. But I don't think that that's a particularly Lib Dem quality. I think there are people who want to undermine other people's access to democracy across all parties. I think it's just particularly salient at the moment with Remainers and Lib Dems.
Hmm. I don't know if we've kind of picked this up before, but if we do actually end up leaving, do you see the Lib Dems as actually becoming the party of rejoining the EU then? They have said that already.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, almost definitely. But that is, again, an incredibly complicated question. It would be like just saying that you're going to leave the EU and having no plan on how you're going to leave the EU. Can you imagine that? It would completely depend on any kind of reaccession negotiation would go. And then hopefully we would have, if that were the case, we would have some kind of decency having a very clear kind of like, this is what EU membership is going to look like if we were to join again. But one of the really annoying things is that we would probably end up having to do a lot of that legwork because of the amount of complaints that would come out of the Remain camp, who would say, well, you need to say specifically what kind of a relationship we're going to be. Are we going to join the Euro? Are we going to be in Schengen? Are we going to blah, 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 blah? All things that they got away with not specifying. But you know what? I'm better than that, and I will rise above it.
But you've already said you won't necessarily campaign to rejoin.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. It depends. Obviously, I have a nostalgic now, I guess, a nostalgic and kind of romantic ideal of being a European citizen, and that was the main thing that I voted on when it came to whether or not we stayed in the European Union. Once that gets taken away from me, the idea of going back in also has to make sense. And so it would be very silly for me to just say, oh yeah, no matter what, I would vote to rejoin, because it would depend on what terms we ended up rejoining, and anybody who says any differently is frankly a little bit dim.
But presumably, if no deal, assuming we leave with no deal, or even if we leave with a deal, there's been many, many politicians, people like Emily Thornberry, who's the Labour Shadow Foreign Secretary.
Who isn't doing a very good job of expressing herself, is she?
No, we can pick that up in a second, actually. But she's basically said that, Labour would negotiate for a new deal, but she doesn't think any deal that Labour would get would be better than remaining, which I actually think is a coherent position, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but
I
you, but
realise
yeah, but
that.
you understand how easy that is to pick apart. It's very silly, kind of like framing of it when it comes to kind of like public debate or being on Question Time or anything along those
I
lines.
see why she's been slated for it, but I think the slating is unfair, to be honest. If you're assume, Labour's position now is that we will have a second, they will campaign for a second referendum, or they, if they formed a government, they would put forward a second referendum with Remain as an option and with a deal that they would renegotiate as an option.
But
I
not
think
no
that.
deal. There would be no deal on the ballot, and I still think that that needs to exist. But then again, that's because
Because it's been
I'm
raised.
principled,
Okay.
I
I actually think you are, to be fair. I think there's been a lot of, I mean, I don't agree with your stance on the second referendum per se, but
yeah.
if there was a second referendum, I do
Yeah,
get why you'd support
at
no
least
deal
I'm
being on the
consistent, I
ballot.
guess. I will continue to beat this drum, Jimmy.
Speaking of consistency,
And drums. No, wait.
drums, maybe. So John Bercow, the now, well, soon to be former Speaker of the House of Commons, has announced that he will step down by October 31st, or when there's a general election, whichever is sooner. It doesn't seem that likely that there will be a general election before that. We didn't actually discuss this whole thing around the prorogation and there being a second, a court case going to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
If they decide that a, we'll sort of dip into this before we turn to John Bercow. If the Supreme Court decides that prorogation is legal, that kind of is an end to the matter, and it will go ahead until mid-October, so Parliament won't sit till then. If they decide it's illegal,
Well, then they would have to decide to call off all of the party conferences, as an example.
yes.
And that is a weird thing to do because I'm assuming that they've put down their deposits. For the
Well,
venues.
they must have done that ages ago
Yeah,
now.
I mean, like the Lib Dems are doing their conference right now.
But do you think that if that happened, Parliament sits again, presumably, I mean, in theory, they could sit from Wednesday
Yeah,
onwards, couldn't
yeah,
they?
yeah.
Do you think that that raises the possibility of there being a general election before October 31st? It doesn't seem as though there are the numbers for it in
No, and I
Parliament.
don't think that there is a desire from Labour for it to go to an election just yet. I think they are quite happy to see the can kicked down the road and for the Conservative Party to continue to unravel itself.
Labour's position on this seems to be that they don't trust Boris Johnson to request an extension, and so until that's taken place and an extension is approved by the
There were
EU,
some people
no.
suggesting that Boris Johnson was going to request the extension, then send another letter and revoke that extension, which would be, to be fair, I'd give up. Like, hilarious, but also, what is the point anymore?
Yeah, I mean that at the very least, Gina Miller would be straight back in there calling another court
I still
case.
want to be her when I grow up.
So yeah, general election, it seems to me to be quite unlikely. I think Boris Johnson will be forced to call for that extension. Whether they give it, still a slight question
Does
around
he
that,
quit, do you
given.
think, if he has to do that? He said do or die 31st of October.
So there has been this possibility raised that he would actually resign as Prime Minister, but remain as leader of the Tory Party, and that would make, potentially it could make Jeremy Corbyn Prime Minister, and therefore he wouldn't have, but Johnson wouldn't have broken his pledge to ask for an extension because somebody else would do it, potentially
He'd
Jeremy
call a vote
Corbyn.
of no confidence in himself, essentially, is what would happen.
Well, no, because you can resign. I mean, this used to happen all the time back
Oh,
in like
really?
the 18th century. Like prime ministers would, well, I'd say resign. Often prime ministers would not be allowed to resign unless the king was prepared, or was prepared to let them. But yeah, you could resign as prime minister, and then somebody else would take your place. But you'd still be an MP, and you could still be leader of your party. Although, admittedly, they more had factions back then. But I suppose there's a question of whether the Tories would let him remain as leader, given that he's resigned as Prime Minister. But
I mean, it's the membership, man. But then would the members of parliament, because they're the ones who get the first say on who stays as the leader, right? I'm not sure he has that faith after kicking out so many of their colleagues.
Well, he's probably kicked out most of his critics, to be honest. He probably has stronger support proportionally among Tory MPs than he did before.
Oh, if only it were that easy, actually.
I'd have thought.
Maybe it is that easy, we'll see.
But, you know, in theory, this is a vaguely plausible scenario, although I could see it not going this way, is that he resigns as Prime Minister, somebody else is appointed as Prime Minister, he waits around for a general election, probably after an extension's been granted for RU membership, and then they have that whole people versus parliament election game plan anyway. Mm. This is all spitballing.
Never.
It's not even us, it's
everyone.
The general hive.
There are some
Twitter.
People who have come up with very plausible kind of like ways out of this. So I hope that Johnson and Cummings are actually paying attention to Twitter.
I'm sure they follow it obsessively. So John Bercow, as we said, yeah. we'll probably be leaving on October 31st, given the lack of likelihood around another general election uh-huh. before then. What do you think his main legacy has been?
A lot of performance. He is certainly interesting to watch when he occupies that chair. Making Parliament cool again. Order!
I think Vox or something wrote up his retirement announcement as... The British guy who shouts order, order is retiring from his job or something like that.
I hate it when Americans cover our politics. Also, I think that there genuinely are a lot of positive things that he has done in its 9 years since he took this chair, right? Where he has championed backbench MPs, no matter what their... what their affiliations. He has been a believer in the representation of the Houses of Parliament, which I think is an important institution that needed to be cared for and looked after and not just rolled over in the face of the executive. We have fewer formal checks and balances than the United States does, and I think that it is good that the Houses of Parliament have been used as a check and balance for the decisions that governments have tried to make. He's also going to be seen as like a frustrator of those who have wanted to be able to use their concentration of power as a way of getting what they wanted through without consulting the representatives of the British people. And obviously I'm going to put it in those romantic terms.
where are these representatives? They certainly don't sit in Parliament.
Ayo! Shots fired! I will be honest, I don't know a huge amount about his bullying allegations, but apparently those are also things that he will be remembered for. But he is somebody who cared deeply for his for the institution that he represented and defended. That is obvious from his goodbye speech. It will be very difficult for his shoes to be filled.
So I think there is a general thing that he's a bit of a pompous arse.
Have you seen anyone in Parliament?
That is true, but he is a pompous arse among pompous arses. he certainly stands out in that respect.
What do you mean by pompous arse?
He's very fond of the sound of his own voice. And I realise I'm somebody that has my own podcast, yeah. So I can...
I don't think we are ones to throw the stones in our glass house, Jimmy.
I mean, you know, takes a thief to catch a thief is all I'll say. I think, you know, his insulting of members of parliament when he wants them to pipe down is, I mean, some of them are very funny, to be honest, but, you know, he is supposed to be there as an impartial referee, or at least that's one interpretation of the speaker's role. And I think that, particularly over the last couple of years, despite, you know, this John Bercow was actually a Tory MP. That's when you're actually selected as Speaker, you have to resign the whip, so you're no longer affiliated with any party. But he's actually somebody who's been much more closely associated with kind of Labour eventually, or at least kind of left wing politics.
I disagree. I don't think necessarily with Labour and left-wing politics, but certainly Remain politics.
Certainly Remain politics.
He was very much a product of the coalition, the ideologies of the coalition, and has been, for that reason, very popular in centrist politics.
Yeah, that's maybe a better way of putting it. But I don't think he's actually damaged the perception of the speaker per se, but he's in fulfilling the role as speaker, he has been seen as very partisan. You know, this was evinced by when he announced his retirement. Generally, people on the opposition side of the house applauded him, and people on the government side of the house didn't applaud him.
Had a sulk.
But if you're refereeing a football game, one of your roles is surely to make sure that one side doesn't feel that they like you a lot more than the other. You know, that surely is part of the job.
Yeah. Interesting.
And he's failed to do that. You know, you might say that some of it is unjustifiable because the Tories have, you know, they've particularly under Theresa May in the last part of her premiership, and also under Boris Johnson in the last 2 weeks, they've sought to break a lot of rules. Mm-hmm, it's fair to say. So
you maybe can put on both sides. Like, the rules have been stretched or broken by absolutely blooming everybody, and because Burko, yes, I think, was there, both instigating some of those stretches, but also being a counter to some of those stretches and breaks, he has clearly been, he's landed on kind of like the opposite side of the argument to those who are in the government benches now. But maybe that's because that's what was needed from that role in order to reinforce the power of Parliament.
Yeah, well, yeah, he would say that, you know, it looks like he's pro-Remain, but he would say, well, I'm pro-Parliament against the government. I think that Parliament has a role in scrutinising the government, and I'm here to facilitate that. And because the government is pursuing Leave, and, you know, let's be frank, Parliament is pursuing Remain, at least, you know, the section of Parliament that isn't actually affiliated to the government, that's why it's looked like a pro-Remain series of behaviours.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know very much more about the allegations of bullying that he's always denied, we should probably say?
So, earlier this year, there was a report by BBC Newsnight where it talked about the kind of culture of bullying in Parliament, kind of in general, but John Bercow was one of those figures that was actually was named as a bully, and I think... I don't want to say personal assistant, but one of his clerks or something made some allegations against him. Essentially that he was a bit of an arsehole. I think this is not wanting to diminish those claims, but we have all of us, most people have worked with an arsehole at some point during their career. And I guess it's a bit of a debate as to whether he was within the acceptable bounds of arseholery. I'm not sure, I probably should, I've got to say it now, but judging by his performances in Parliament, you can see how he would be an arsehole in his day-to-day life. It's not like a massive stretch. Given he would readily insult members of Parliament when he was telling them to shut up. But
don't you think that he would be a great dinner party guest?
No, because he likes the sound of his voice too much, and his stories aren't that interesting.
Okay, fair enough.
So, I mean, who the fuck holds dinner parties? I know you're 30,
Jasmine. Oh my god, leave me alone. You will not invoke the T word.
Who do you think
is going to replace him? Because convention states that it switches between the two main parties. So it should be somebody from Labour next, correct?
I was not aware that's a convention.
It's a convention, but obviously nobody's ever written it down, and so who the fuck knows what's going to happen?
So Harriet Harman seems to be...
They keep on saying that, but has she ever said that she wanted to be the speaker?
I think she has.
Oh, has she?
Has she not?
I don't know.
I think they read a story about it on the... Hang on. Let me just do some typing in the background.
Some casual Googling.
Do you think she'd be a good speaker?
I don't know. I think she is incredibly articulate, and she is somebody who understands that place more than anybody. She's the mother of the house as well. She's the longest serving female MP on either side of the benches.
So she's announced her bid to become.
Oh, she's announced it. Oh, how interesting! So, yes. Okay, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah,
she'd
announced. she's fully on board. She wants to do it.
She's super Remain-y.
I guess so, but
this will be interesting because this is the first time that, aside from kind of party politics, that there is such a binary question, kind of defining our political landscape at the moment, and there is nobody within Parliament who can straddle both of those sides. I don't think. Do you? Maybe Philip Hammond.
Philip Hammond. I don't know. I think the you're kind of right that there is nobody who really sits in the middle of the Leave Remain dispute, really. Mm. So it's kind of hard to see how you'll find anyone who is seen as neutral in that regard. Which, you know, I think is a shame because, you know, in my opinion, I'm much more on the side that the Speaker should be neutral and should be seen as a referee rather than somebody that...
But maybe we should admit that it's impossible for that to be the case and just diminish the actual power that the Speaker should have and maybe write some of those rules down.
Possibly. I mean, there is a... The thing is, if you make the Speaker more openly partisan, you then end up with actually some... I mean, they sort of have this in the French system, for instance. You have a president, then you have a prime minister. The prime minister sits in their legislature. The president is a separate office, mm-hmm. like a directly elected executive. And then you sort of end up with two power bases. So if you had a more partisan Speaker in the House of Commons, they would potentially pursue an agenda that was slightly separate than that of the Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. So that seems, you know, it seems to me that actually having an impartial referee makes more sense. But yeah, I think it would make far more sense not to have an MP become the Speaker, even though that is how the system works. Because, you know, firstly, whichever seat they sit in, those people who live in that seat are denied a vote.
No representation in Parliament. Agreed.
Yeah, no.
Maybe
somebody from the
House of Lords should come down and be the Speaker each time, and some people put themselves forward from that House. But then that would also ruin convention of the two houses not meddling with one another.
Well, surely it would be better to have some sort of committee with with representatives from each of the parties that have seats in the House of Commons, and then they decide between them on a neutral appointee to be the referee. Mm-hmm. You know, surely that makes more sense.
Maybe this
something
should be
like
the
that.
Queen's job. Then
she's
she'd
a bit
actually,
busy, mate. She's got
work.
Other things on.
And you'd hate her less.
I mean, I want the monarchy abolished, but I think the Queen puts in a fair stint.
Oh, okay.
You know, she's she you know, she does work for her taxpayer money.
Oh, you're so generous.
Which is more than can be said for some of the other royals.
Ayo.
On that note, should we wrap this up?
Yes. Find us on the socials. I'm at Jazza John and Jimmy's on JDE Nichols. I'm about to go and take a look at Ground Zero.
It's actually incredibly moving. I know that sounds like an obvious thing to say, but I was impressed by how moving I found it, if you know what I mean. Some memorials can come off as a bit flat, but it is quite something.
Oh, thanks, babe.
And almost on the anniversary of September the 11th as well.
A bit late. Please do leave us a review, especially as an old podcast, because it's the only way that we get any attention anymore. If you are so inclined, please do support us on Patreon. We really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it.
Okay. All right, shall we go then?
Let's go.
Bye-bye.
Bye.